Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. My guest today is Robert Shea, contributor to the IBM Center book, Fast Government, Accelerating Service Quality by Reducing Cost and Time. So, Robert, the barriers to success requires a concerted effort to overcome them. In fact, you identify six conditions that give innovation, speed, and performance a fighting chance in government. I'd like to explore each of these conditions. Would you tell us more about the first condition you identify around clear goal setting?
Yep. It's difficult for agencies to identify the outcomes they're trying to achieve. In government, it's easy to keep producing what it is you're supposed to be doing, and we could even do that faster and perhaps cheaper. But if you don't know what goal it is you're trying to achieve, all of that activity could be for naught. So we need to remind ourselves what it is we're ultimately trying to achieve. In the case of security clearances, for instance, we want a faster security clearance process, but we also want an effective one. And if people don't think the security clearance process adequately protects us from people who would do wrong, then it doesn't matter how fast it is or slow. So you need to keep those mutual goals, sometimes competing goals, in mind as you go about doing that process. But it's also true of programs in the other area. I remember one program we assessed at the Department of Education aimed at improving student achievement, and it was focused on an after-school program. Multiple evaluations found that even though kids in that program were improving, they weren't doing nearly as well as kids outside the program. So, you know, even though the data they had showed some progress, the program actually was putting those kids at a disadvantage. So you really need to ask yourself, how well am I achieving my goals, not only in isolation, but compared with other activities?
And you underscore that this is not about activities or outputs, but about outcomes.
That's right.
What do you mean by outcomes, and what are some of the benefits of assessing progress toward those outcomes?
So an outcome is the thing you're trying to achieve, the ultimate impact that we want to have, the things we do, the things we're trying to accomplish are pretty unbelievable, and we need to make sure we're really clear about those outcomes. We want a secure nation. We want to improve education achievement. We want to cure cancer, AIDS. We want to achieve any kind of ambitious goals in the programs we accomplish. That is distinguished from inputs, which are basically the money you spend, the activities you're performing, and outputs. So if we invest in a program that puts a kid in an after-school program, neither of those are the ultimate outcome. The ultimate outcome is that kid achieving, doing better in school?
Well, your second condition is to be completely transparent about what you are doing or aren't doing. Would you elaborate on the importance of this condition? And what are the benefits of openness, and how does it get people to move towards the right action?
Well, transparency is a condition that I've come to later in my career. If you're in government, you are almost in a cocoon, especially when you're in the executive branch or even in the White House. You are conditioned to keep what you're doing secret until it can be revealed publicly. So more often than not, major initiatives or accomplishments are released as a surprise to people who care about them, namely the Congress, but other stakeholders as well. So they may or may not like what you're announcing, the budget you're proposing, the initiative you're launching. You'd be better served if they were brought into that process much earlier. And my best example is USA Spending. Congress enacted the Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act, and I was given responsibility for implementing that. I had a year to launch a website that tracked every financial transaction of the government and no real budget to do it with. So we had Congress and other stakeholders at the table, and GAO was among them, as we met, decided how we were going to do it, trade-offs we made. So when we launched it, imperfect as it was, they celebrated that. They knew the decisions we made, why we made them, and why this imperfect solution had to be launched when it did. The law requires that sub-grantees' transactions be reported, but it was impractical for us to do it by the required date. Mm-hmm. And if we had just launched the site without having brought our stakeholders along, they would have been angry. They would have held us to account for that. As it was, they knew the barriers to getting to where we were going, and when we launched, were delighted at the progress we made. And I think the major factor that contributed to that shared accomplishment was the fact that we had those folks at the table. We were completely transparent about what we were doing.
It's earlier than that, too, with PART. When you folks published all the PART results, it was transparent.
Yeah, it was. We produced initially all the detailed answers and evidence on which those answers were based on the internet, but it was in a spreadsheet form. We engaged some focus groups that helped us tailor a website to the public's appetite, really. So there was summary information that linked to detailed information. We really evolved, and I think the government is evolving. You know, there's so much more information available today than ever before, and the challenge is how to really filter it and make it useful. The usefulness of things about which we're transparent is evolving.
Well, the next condition you outline is around leadership, and you referenced it earlier. How important is it to have a good leader in place for an organization to be successful at fostering innovation, speed, and performance?
It's essential. And you'll never always have a complement of leaders that meet these requirements. You know, someone who cares about the way an organization is operating, who cares about its people and what they think of the leadership and the mission of the organization, and are willing to take risks, invest what they need to improve. It's a leader who is humble, who will accept criticism, use that information to help modify their direction. I just can't underscore how important leadership is to the success of an organization, to the extent to which it will accomplish its goals, do things faster, better, cheaper.
So one of the frequent complaints that government gets is that it's not accountable, it lacks accountability. Your fourth condition describes the need to hold leaders and their teams accountable. Why is accountability such a foundational condition to foster innovation, speed, and performance?
Well, there's so many examples where a federal program continues to fall short of its goals, but no improvement is made. There's no change in direction. There are some anomalies, of course, but there are many examples where people feel that the government's not being responsive. And, you know, we need to be fair. I think we got a long way to go to restoring the compact we have with our political and career leadership and the federal employees they oversee and manage. But if we get that right, I think we can have a process by which people are held accountable fairly for their performance, and they respond to it. You know, we've got a situation today where, our pay system right now pays people the same amount of money each year, irrespective of their performance. And I've tried very hard in my career to implement some reforms that made the pay system more performance sensitive. We are a long way towards having a government where that happens. But frankly, we've got a long way to go towards convincing our employees that they can trust a system to do that.
So your fifth condition is around something we talked about briefly earlier, and that's celebrating risk-taking. isn't the institutional culture of an entity as significant as the government, the federal government, in its size and mission, inherently adverse to risk-taking? And what can be done to transform that institutional culture?
It is. It is inherently averse to risk. And without a strong leader backing you up, it's going to be difficult to move an organization to become a bigger risk taker.
Yeah. And is it a risk taking on an incremental basis, or is it more like the moonshot? I mean, how do you cultivate this and accept and instill an appetite for risk taking within the federal government?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. We want to shoot for the moon. We don't want to be irresponsible. Mm-hmm. We are stewards of taxpayer dollars. That means that people who go to work every day have to give a portion of what they earn, not willfully, mind you, not voluntarily. They are required to give this to the federal government. So that's a sacred trust that we have over those monies. But we want to figure out where we can make an investment that has a chance for a huge return on investment. One of the things I'm most excited in the government today is pay for success mm-hmm. programs. The concept here is that you can put out a pot of money that will be provided to an entity only if it achieves the results we're trying to achieve. So let's say we're trying to improve education in a community. The Pay for Success program, the way it would work is a group of investors, social reformers, educators would come together, implement a program, have it evaluated, and only if that evaluation showed positive results would they get any money from the federal government. There's not a lot of evidence that this works. Mm-hmm. But the Obama administration is testing it in a number of areas. And should it work, this could dramatically transform the way we manage grants, for instance. Only pay money for a program that produces quantifiable results. Today, the opposite is almost true. Mm-hmm. We pay money, and only in the rare circumstance can we show quantifiable results from our investments. That's the kind of risk that is shooting for the moon. If that proves to work, we could really greatly improve the return on investment we get from those sacred tax dollars.
Is this similar to the social impact bond?
It's precisely social impact bonds. In America, we have to call it something different.
So your sixth condition is around collaboration. Why is it so important? We hear this term always and everywhere, and it's often, you know, echoed, and it could be means everything to everybody. What exactly? Why is it so important? What does it mean, and how does it relate to a concept of shared leadership?
There's no activity in the federal government. There's no result we're trying to achieve that doesn't involve a number of players. So, at the most basic, you're talking about federal, state, local players trying to secure the border, improve crime in a city, help people get employment, improve education attainment. All of those activities, core functions of the federal government, are being performed at every level of government. But at the federal level, they are also being performed by multiple agencies and programs. So we've got, in most areas, dozens or so funding streams trying to get at the same goal. At the most basic level, to accomplish those objectives, you need collaboration at the federal, state, and local level. But if you could combine these funding streams, share lessons learned, and move investment to those activities proven to be more effective, then you would get a greater return on your dollar. People would see the return more immediately on their investment because they're at the table. They're in the conversation. You know, another initiative of the Obama administration is the Collaborative Forum. Mm. This is a group that is aimed at identifying administrative barriers among multiple programs that, if removed, could make it easier for state local governments, nonprofits get access to dollars and invest them instead of overcoming these administrative barriers in activities that are, you know, more directly impact what we're trying to accomplish.
Interesting. So, Robert, as you were penning this contribution to the Fast Government Report, were you thinking about why is creating the conditions for innovation, speed, and performance seem like an easier thing to do in theory rather than in practice? Why is that the case?
Well, it's much easier to write a theoretical piece than a practical one. It's very hard to do. You know, there are we talk about collaboration, getting the folks in the room aimed at a similar purpose. They don't often want to cede any ground, collaborate. They don't want to do anything differently. So these conversations are sometimes very difficult, but I've seen it work, and it's for those reasons that I think we ought to celebrate what made those things successful and try to replicate them. Because, you know, with the budget the way it is today, I don't think we have a choice. It's going to, I pray, make it more imperative that we take the steps necessary to get everybody together, focus on what's more important and what's working.
So you've had a couple of about 5 years out of public service so far.
Yep.
From that perspective, to what extent is public service about doing big and important things?
It is to the greatest extent about doing big and important things, from the soldier, the tax collector, the border patrol agent, a park ranger, a food inspector. All of these positions, all of these public servants and the people that support them are having such an important impact on the American people that it's hard to describe. It's hard to fathom. You know, there's a soldier in the Middle East who's ensuring that we are safe from a terrorist attack. The Border Patrol agent is making sure our borders are, to the extent possible, seamless. But the food inspector is making sure that the food we eat doesn't kill us. And a park ranger is really bringing to life some of America's greatest treasures. I could go on and on about the unbelievable things that public servants are doing every day. And though they're doing it imperfectly in many cases, it's worth trying to make sure that we give them the support they need to do it better.
So what other advice would you give a government executive who's seeking to foster innovation, speed, and performance within their agency?
Do it now. Don't wait for permission. Know that, know what you're getting into, because if you're trying to move the ball down the field to be faster, better, cheaper, you're going to hit some speed bumps. Mm-hmm. So know what you're getting into, but few have the same authority and resources you do to have the impact you can have. That's what I want folks to understand, that the responsibility and authority and resources they're given, though they may seem diminished right now, are greater than probably anybody else in the world. They have a better opportunity to make an impact than probably anybody else in the world.
Robert, thanks for joining us today. It was great to have you.
Delightful. Enjoyed it very much.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Chuck Pro, editor of the IBM Center Report, Fast Government, Accelerating Service Quality While Reducing Cost and Time, and contributor to that report, Robert Shea. You can download this or any IBM Center report at businessofgovernment.org. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.